Well, for these 6 weeks after Easter, our lectionary has us in the epistle of 1 Peter. It's a short letter, only 105 verses, and yet it is full and covers a wide field of theology and ethics, a call to holy living and trusting in God, practical counsel for marriage, work, how to relate to government, witnessing to unbelievers, using spiritual gifts, serving as a church officer. All of these are included in this small letter. Chiefly, Peter explores this great mystery of Christian suffering and grief. And it comes after Easter because it's a living hope. Resurrection, as we learned last week, is just not a hope of the future and a future life. It is certainly that, but it is a living hope. It is a hope that goes on right now, day to day. It is a way to live now in this present world. This epistle is called a general epistle. It's not specifically to a church like Corinthians or Thessalonians or Colossians, but it's to a group of people. Peter addresses them this way. We don't have it in our reading. To those who are elect exiles of the dispersion in Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, Bithynia, according to the foreknowledge of God the Father, in the sanctification of the Spirit to obedience to Jesus Christ and the sprinkling with blood. It is addressed to the elect exiles of the dispersion. And these are Greco-Roman colonies scattered throughout mostly Asia Minor, what is Turkey today. And these are Gentiles for the most part, new believers. And you see, to go from being in the Jewish faith to the Christian faith, well, yeah, it was a bit of a leap, okay? It was different, but not anything compared to what it was to be a Gentile, to be in these pagan places throughout the Roman Empire. And so Peter is addressing Christians who were formerly Gentiles, and they had just experienced this radical change in their life. A radical change from paganism. They were radically changed from their neighbors, from their own family members. And for some of them, it even brought suffering and persecution. The surrounding culture was hostile to the faith that they chose to follow. And Peter preaches really a two-word sermon in his greeting when he says, to the elect exiles. Now, some translations call them strangers or aliens. Our version translates the word parapedimo, translates it into exiles. They are chosen exiles. They are eklektos parapedimos. And in that short Greek phrase, Peter is preaching a sermon. First of all, he's saying, by calling them parapedimos, it's an interesting word. It doesn't mean that you're like an immigrant or an actual person that has moved in from somewhere else. It is a word, it's used by the king of Egypt because people were coming to Alexandria, okay? And people were coming to Alexandria, and life was so good in Alexandria, Egypt, and so prosperous and so luxurious that the king of Alexandria was afraid that people were just going to settle there and live the good life and fill his city. And so he uses the verb form of this word that we have, exiles, parapedimo, and he gives these people 20 days that they can stay. They're the parapedima, and they can only stay 20 days. They're from somewhere else, and they're sojourners. It's not a word that we use a lot today, a sojourner. That's what Abraham was. He was a sojourner. He lived in a land that wasn't his. He was just temporarily there. And that's the word that Peter uses when he says that you are the chosen parapodemos, sojourners. But they weren't just sojourners. They weren't just resident aliens. They were electo exiles. They were chosen according to the foreknowledge of God. And so there again, we have a very, very specific word that no one sees it used, this electo, when talking about a sojourner or an exile in Jewish and Christian literature. Nobody calls them that. Only Peter uses that word in referring to these people who are only staying. He doesn't mean that they're staying literally in the town they're in. He means on earth, in this world, you are only here. You are a sojourner. You are a parapodemo. You are only here for a very short time. Your true homeland is beyond. Okay? Your true homeland is beyond. And not only that, not only are you in exile, but you have been chosen by the foreknowledge of God. And what that implies is that their status, they were chosen to live in this hostile environment at that particular time, and it was determined before the world ever began. Determined. God had these people there living in this very difficult situation as sojourners, temporarily living there, and for this particular time and place, it was preordained before the world. God wasn't surprised what was going on in the culture. It didn't take him by surprise and think, oh, I put these people here, it's going to be real good. Oh, look at the trouble they're having. It was all pre-planned. We too are living in a community and a society that challenges the ways of Christ at every turn. Every turn. Jesus says, love your enemies. The world says, no, no, seek revenge, get even. Jesus says, sell all that you have and give it to the poor. The world says, no, get more stuff. You got to get more, you'll be happy. Get as much as you can. Jesus says, turn the other cheek. The world says, no, no, you got to hit first. Strike first. Jesus says, if you lose your life, you will find it. The world says, no. You are in charge. You take the world and you go out and you conquer it. Jesus said, take the plank out of your own eye before you judge other people. Look at yourself. The world says, oh, blame somebody. Find someone to blame. Find some group to blame. Find anybody. It's anybody else's responsibility, but don't take responsibility for yourself. Jesus says, love others as I have loved you. The world says, love only if you're going to get something in return. Jesus sets out a certain way that we're to behave sexually, in our bodies, in our life, in our marriages. The world says, just do whatever feels good. Just do whatever you think is right. It seems that no matter what Jesus has to say about how we live, that this world in some way contradicts it. We live, you might say, I heard it put this way, that we live out of sync. We live out of sync with this world. And Peter writes to people who are living out of sync. They feel like they don't belong. They feel like they don't fit in. Do you ever feel like that? I feel like that sometimes. You know, I had to fill out a form the other day about something, and it said, am I a male, am I a female, or am I another? What? I feel like I'm not fitting in sometimes to what's going on. I watched a guy on television, I watched on a major TV station when they had the shooting in Nashville, And I watched a commentator on worldwide cable news, well-known channel, and he came out and I heard him say it. I don't know why it surprised me, but I heard him say it, that shooting at that school in Nashville was because it is the fault of white Christians. That's what he said. And sometimes I ask myself, where are we here? What is this world? Peter reminds us that the resurrection provides a living hope. Right now. It starts right now and it grows. It increases year by year, minute by minute as we mature as Christians. And it is no accident at all that you and I are living in this time period. At this particular time in history. In these conditions. It's not an accident. God knew it before the world began and planned it. It's a living hope for now in this world, and it's a hope that's also confident in expectation of the life to come. An inheritance, he says. Now, I don't know if you ever received an inheritance. Maybe some of you have gotten a sizable inheritance. I did get an inheritance a number of years back. My father died. My mother sold the house. I got a very small inheritance, and I did what any good preacher would do. I went and bought a motorcycle with it. And so that's my inheritance. Linda and I always joke. She says, that's your inheritance. You know, you're going to have to hang on. And so I take good care of it, you know. I clean it. I wax it. It's my baby. It's safe, you know. It's in the garage. I don't ride it in the rain. But you know what? It is going to fade away. It's going to rust. It's going to die. It's going to be gone. Not the inheritance that we have as Christians. It is imperishable, undefiled, unfading, and it is guarded. It is kept. It is kept. That's a military word. Guarded. It tells us in the Acts that Paul was put under guard. He was watched, okay? And that's what our inheritance is. It is actually right now under guard, preserved in heaven, Peter says. So rejoice. Rejoice, even if for a little while it can get rough. It can be tough, right? There are trials, various trials and tribulations. And some of them are real, real bad. But Peter says, you know, it's a refining process. Because for centuries, right? For centuries, gold has been commonly understood as the symbol for the most precious metal and lasting material that there is. I mean, you can't even turn the television or the radio on and somebody's telling you got to get gold, right? You got to get gold. It's going to get bad no matter what happens. Gold, gold, gold's going to be there. Never going to perish. You got to have gold. Buy gold. But there's something even more durable than that. And it is the trying of your faith. It is much more precious, it says literally in the Greek. It is much more precious than gold that will perish. The trying of our faith. The late William Rathje received a PhD in anthropology from Harvard University in 1971. He was a longtime director. He has since died, but he was a longtime director of something that was called the Garbage Project. And he actually was a pioneer in the field that is now known as garbology, right? There is an actual science of garbology. And William Rathje is the pioneer in this field, and he traveled all over the continent. And he dug in landfills. He literally went through trash heaps and garbage for information about societies and cultures and how people, and he found out all of these things from going through the garbage. I mean, he found out that that most human households waste about 10% of their food. He found a steak from 1973. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing that it lasted that long. Several newspapers in their total, completely from the Truman presidency. The thing is that William Rathje found meaning in garbage. Now, the trials and the suffering and the things that we go through are certainly not garbage to God. But how much more precious and refining are they and preparing us and giving us value and meaning in this place where we are supposed to be at this time?